Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by the University of Rhode Island's online cannabis certificate program. We've been talking a lot about the legalization of recreational cannabis that went into effect last year here in Rhode Island. And if you're already in the industry or wondering what the best path to break into the field is, well, the University of Rhode Island has that aforementioned program to help you become highly competitive in numerous areas of the cannabis industry. It's fully accredited by URI's College of Pharmacy, all right? This is the real deal. It's online, 100% online, and it can be completed in just 2 semesters. Learn more by visiting uri.edu/online/cannabis or just give them a call, 401-874-5280. We've been talking about cannabis here on Bartholomew Town for several years now, really taking a look at it from a lot of different angles, from the regulatory angle, from the testing standpoint in terms of product that is available in our dispensaries. We've talked about it from a cultural standpoint. We've talked about it a lot from a business standpoint. Listeners certainly know that the University of Rhode Island's Cannabis Certificate Program is one of our main sponsors here on the show. So cannabis has been in the forefront of a lot of the discussions that we've had. One thing that we've spent some time, but I don't think enough time on, is the equity piece. We talk about this when we discuss people of color who have been most impacted by what now appear to be, for the average person, outrageous policies surrounding cannabis, and making sure that those who are most impacted have the first or best or at least a good opportunity inside the cannabis industry space. We've seen court challenges to that notion in New York. We've seen all kinds of policy that's been attempted and failed. And hopefully that will continue to grow. And we'll certainly be talking about that more here on the show. But today, an interesting angle that makes perfect sense that I actually was pitched. And the discussion is women in cannabis. And we're joined by Megan Sheehan, who's an attorney and the firm owner at Green Path Legal. Good morning, Megan. And thanks so much for making the time here as we discuss women in cannabis and finding opportunities in what, you know, anecdotally is definitely a male-dominated industry.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
So give us the overview of your advocacy in terms of the role that women writ large should be playing in this cannabis, the cannabis sector right now, whether it be on the retail side, on the distribution side, on the grow side, the marketing side. There's a lot of opportunity there. Talk about why you want to elevate the voices of women.
Yeah, I think that your point earlier around that this is a male-dominated industry is very true. And people have asked me before kind of why is that? And I think it is an interesting question. I don't think I have all the answers. I do think that part of it is, you know, as we go from being, gray market or legacy cultivators, meaning people who were doing this before it was state legal, to having a state legal industry, the startup costs for having a cannabis business are just extremely high. And so people who already have access to a lot of capital are going to be the people who are going to have the money to start the businesses, to afford the tax burden, to have, you know, the ability to grow and even sustain kind of the ups and downs. And so unfortunately, you know, the reality is that a lot of times those are men who have more access to capital. That's not at all to say that there aren't a lot of really great women and people of color also out there doing really amazing work. And so I think part of our job is to really highlight that leadership, support that leadership. I think there's a lot of complaints from people in the Rhode Island cannabis industry of it being very clicky, it being very kind of there's a lot of arm twisting or intimidation, between different license holders. And I think that, I'm connected with just a group of women who are really trying to build a different way of having the industry and collaborate, having a collaborative approach as opposed to kind of this I win, you lose, or vice versa approach. So there's a lot of great businesses out there and activist organizers, people in cannabis, a lot of them being women. So we just want to raise that up and make more space for more women to get involved.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. It is a competitive landscape. There's no question about it. I mean, especially when you have a finite cap on the number of licenses available for retail, and as such, that trickles down to cultivation and other aspects of the business being sort of limited in terms of where you can go. We also have this ridiculous situation now where one of the dispensaries had put billboard signs up and had to take them down because we put the cart before the horse in terms of our full spectrum regulation and policies in cannabis. So the industry, as you, I like that term gray area because it still is evolving on a statewide basis, and it's there's a lack of clarity. At the same time, those turbulent business environments, those sectors sometimes, those environments sometimes create an energy in a sector where new approaches, new players can come in. So this might be a good moment for what you're describing. When you say cooperative, do you see it as, frankly, instead of five or six businesses being the dominant players, instead trying to almost socialistically spread the wealth? Is that kind of where you're going, explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that so the way that you have kind of described the thinking of the industry, I think is kind of where we're starting, the place we want to first start challenging, right? So there's the idea that there's a limited number of consumers and we have to kind of slit each other's throats to get at them, right? And I think this, kind of the ownership, diversity of ownership, I think also relates to the diversity of consumers, right? So I do work in Mass too. I have a lot of family there. And, it's like my great aunties are the ones who are like, oh, I just discovered vape pens, right? There's been an education process and, a way that it's been normalized, I think, in Mass in a way that it hasn't happened in Rhode Island. So to me, part of it is doing some of that education work to be able to, we're bringing more people to discover the power of this plant instead of just saying, okay, there's a finite number of consumers and we're just going to, arm wrestle each other for them. So I think that's kind of one piece of that. And then I also think, just having this idea that there's enough for everyone, there's enough to go around, right? If we're doing it smart. And again, a lot of that's education, kind of expanding the consumer base, being smart about the different types of work that people are doing, right? So, I think that there's like, for example, a huge untapped potential in helping people who want to do home cultivation, who maybe weren't medical patients, but helping people doing, education or support for people doing that work, right? So there's lots of different ways that people can be in the industry. And then certainly we're looking a lot and working with a lot of great business owners and leaders who, are all women at this point around advocating for social equity, improving the current social equity structure in the adult use legislation that was passed last year. So it's like a starting point, but we think it could be a lot stronger. And again, I think that really is recognizing that, the war on drugs disproportionately impacted poor people and people of color, that it's really hard for women to be in leadership roles in any industry, especially this one. So really trying to make sure that the regulations and the social equity fund are used in a way that actually supports these businesses.
No, that makes complete sense. The infrastructure of cannabis regulation is something that'll almost certainly be laughed at in a decade from now as we look back on the really some of the colossal mistakes that have been made in this state in terms of the delay in the rollout and now some of the disorganization. The Cannabis Oversight Commission, that's not the actual name of it, but that's essentially what it is, has been established. Things are moving a little bit of a more organized direction. But, I wonder, what impact does a lack of federal deregulation or legalization have in the access to capital for not only women, but for everybody? And how much does that lack of access to certain banking elements create a major gap for women, where in other sectors, there are programs, be it Goldman Sachs or whatever the case is, where women have the opportunity to access capital through those streams. A lot of that stuff can't happen because of the federal policies around cannabis right now.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think it's somewhat of a double-edged sword, right? So there's not, you know, the SBA being one of kind of the clearest areas that cannabis businesses can't access capital or funding, you know, that they would be if it was a non-cannabis business. And then on the other side, people often, there's a lot more kind of predatory lending from, you know, just private investors that are kind of willing to, you know, will offer awful terms or kind of leave people kind of holding the bag. You know, it's like they might make promises and then back out. And so that definitely, I think, puts people in a more precarious position. And if you yourself have less resources, right, you're not going to be as able to withstand, you know, if an investor backs out. But then I think the flip side of that, though, is that once, you know, there's federal decriminalization or legalization, you know, Rhode Island businesses are going to be competing with California, with Washington State, with places where, you know, there just are better climates to grow cannabis. So I do think that, you know, part of what I always urge clients to be thinking about is like, let's not think about the next 5 years. Let's think about the next 10 years, the next 20 years. And what do we envision it looking like? And how can you be building a business that's going to sustain, you know, those changes? So even right now, California, Oregon, and Washington have passed legislation to start looking at these interstate compacts to allow, at least on the state level, to allow cannabis to travel between the states. And again, I think it's like what happens on the West Coast eventually trickles its way out here. So even if, say, you know, Rhode Island's competing with Vermont, you know, or Maine, which has a really has a well-known cannabis industry and culture and quality, you know, how are you building a business that could, if that happened here, compete with that? So I think it's a lot about being creative, you know, thinking about this kind of the craft idea of, you know, you can't compete with Walmart, right? But you can be the craft high quality producer potentially, or just to say, okay, I have a short-term plan. But so just to say too, you know, if we face that decriminalization or federal legalization, it's going to mean that, you know, a lot of smaller family run businesses potentially could be faced with just being crushed by outside of Rhode Island businesses or cannabis coming from other places. So that's where it is kind of a double-edged sword. You know, I think that if we're talking about federal legalization, obviously the social equity piece really has to be on the table. And what that looks like, I don't really know, because again, it's been such a state by state, you know, industry. But I do think that's a big concern for people coming up.
No question about it. Yeah, well said there. Last area here. So, you know, as we look to, I guess, looking at the current climate, as you're advising existing clients, as you're thinking down the line, what's your message to young women out there who might say, hey, you know what, regardless of, you know, the effects of the plant on people, positive, negative, whatever their mindset is, just looking at it through the business sector lens. What's your advice to the young woman out there who's listening right now that says, you know what, I see an opportunity, but I don't know how to get into the game other than going to the University of Rhode Island for the cannabis certificate program, a little plug there. But in general, what's your take to anybody out there who's wondering, that's a woman, how do I get into this game?
I think the biggest thing is to connect with other women that are already working in the industry. So, you know, we have some upcoming events that we're partnering with a few different businesses on, that the next one being on June 19th at a Positive Atmosphere CBD Cafe that's really focused on social equity. But again, you know, a lot of the leadership in that space are women who are in the industry, who are already playing a leadership role. And again, I think that all of the women in the Rhode Island cannabis industry are very supportive of each other, are very, you know, encouraging, always open to, you know, answering questions. So I really do think that connecting with other women who are already working in the industry or connected to the industry in Rhode Island is always the best first step. As I'm sure a lot of listeners know, Instagram is kind of the platform for the cannabis businesses. And so that's also a great place to look for people, connect with people. And obviously, you know, in person is great, online is great. And I'm always happy to have a conversation with, you know, people who are looking just to launch a business, you know, without just as a, and, you know, as a wanting to kind of educate people to just say kind of here's generally what the steps would look like. I do think that one thing we really want to be looking at in the coming year is trying to identify some more, you know, accelerator programs or incubator programs that don't receive federal funding that could partner with us on doing cannabis, supporting cannabis businesses, because even if we have, you know, social equity advantages under the licensing, and even if we have the social equity fund, if there isn't that education and support and mentorship and training, you know, what we don't want to have is have businesses fail. So I think, you know, staying connected, you know, education, and yeah, you know, hopefully we'll in the next couple months be able to say, here's the place you can go. In addition to URI, but maybe more on the kind of business end of being ready to launch a cannabis business.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. We need accelerator and incubator programs that we see in many other spaces. And that is really the key, I think, one of the key ingredients to getting both from an equity piece, but I think in general right now, the cannabis industry, you know, I think there's a sense, whether it's the General Assembly or the governor's office or police departments around the state, I think there's a sense of now there certainly are people who are opposed to cannabis legalization out there in government. But I think for the most part, that issue is over. So now it's how do we accelerate Rhode Island's position in this probably soon to be global industry in a niche context, developing people who can be dynamic business leaders. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right. Raising women's voice in this is so critical, and it needs to be. We need to hit the, it's a new industry. Well, it's not a new industry, but it's an emerging sector here in Rhode Island and across the country and around the world. So why not use it to hit the reset button on some of the mistakes that we've made in previous sectors?
I mean, and the problem is that, you know, we waited a lot longer after, you know, masks came online, and there still are a lot of people that would rather go to Fall River, Attleboro, you know, to go to the dispensary. And so, you know, we do, I think we have to build on what they've done in terms of social equity, but do it better. You know, we have an opportunity to improve on the lessons learned in a lot of these other states, and we should really, this is the moment to do it. So we really have to jump on it.
Megan Sheehan is an attorney and firm owner at Green Path Legal, talking women in cannabis. Let's keep in touch. Let's keep on this issue as much as we can.
Absolutely. I love to talk about it. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Coming up on Saturday, June 24th, it is Songs and Stories from Bartholomew Town with me, Bill Bartholomew. It's down at the Pump House in South County, a beautiful venue. It's going to be a fun night. We're going to have Dave Flamon, the great Newport singer-songwriter, opening things up. I'm going to be playing some songs. I'm going to be telling some stories from Bartholomew Town, Saturday, June 24th at the Pump House. Doors open at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock showtime. We'll see you there.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.